Terrible. I met a fellow coming up on the train, and he said, he asked for my autograph for his daughter, you know. And he said, it's good to see you looking so healthy. He said, from what we hear about the Beatles, you know, we expect them to be a real depraved lot, you know, and so we expect you to be washed out and really looking terrible and everything. And, you know, we're having a laugh about it, and I was saying, yeah, I understand, you know, because from what you hear about us, you'd think we'd gone potty, you know. But I tell you, you know, just as four people, we're all right, you know. There's nothing seriously wrong.
Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host, Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com.
Greetings to all weary travellers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. I am, of course, your host, Sam Wiles, and today's episode, well, it really shouldn't exist, actually. Wait, let me back up for a second. As you can see by the title, obviously, this is a part of our Hot Hits and Cold Cuts series of bonus episodes that we've been doing on the show, one of the many little side series. And this is the one where we go through all of the non-album, obscure, unreleased, and bootleg tracks from McCartney's discography. But why episode 2.5 and not episode 3? Well, when I started this series, I was very well aware that I was not up to speed on the plethora, the cornucopia of unknown and oft-forgotten relics in McCartney's back catalogue, and I was more than well aware that there would be the odd occasion where I would inevitably miss, skip, or simply forget about including a song here and there. But, of course, would we have a full episode if it was just the odd song now? Well, no. Apparently I've missed a total of 9 early Beatle-era McCartney compositions, and I wanted to take the time today on this bonus episode to go back in time and give these songs their due credit, their chance to be reviewed slash torn apart by myself, and just to give them a little bit of exposure, as they're a fantastic insight into Paul McCartney's mind during this time. Now, do not think that the existence of this episode in any way implies that I'm going to be working any harder to spot the gaps that will be in the McCartney oeuvre, so they may very well be 0.5 episodes in the future. You may very well possibly see an episode 3.5, but there will definitely be a 4.5. I know I'm going to miss something during the London Town Wings Over America era, I'm sure. I am also aware that I could have just slung these songs at the start of the official part 3 episode of this series, but I have been enjoying keeping those episodes moving along and more or less in a moderately chronological manner, and tagging these songs on the front of a part 3 would only bloat an already heaving episode and just make it seem very contrived and complicated. Conversely though, with just 9 songs, obviously this does mean that this would be a little bit shorter than the average Hot Hits and Cold Cuts episodes, but hey, that one's on me. I mean, I didn't exactly want the problem to build up and build up and build up to the point whereby I've got 3 hours worth of songs that I forgot. It doesn't look very professional. Well, it looks less professional than this very unprofessional episode anyway. But before we start that, we'll do a little bit of housekeeping. If you have anything to say about Paul McCartney, the music, have you seen any of his shows? Have you met the man? Maybe you just want to say hello. Drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. And if it's any good, I'll read it out. Just let me know what's been going on. Follow us on Twitter. If you want to have a more personal contact with the show, follow our Twitter handle, which is @McCartneyPod. It's the best way to keep up to date with the show, as well as to troll me in the early hours of the morning if you feel like it. Find us on Facebook and YouTube simply by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. All of our episodes are posted to these pages and are freely available from both. Drop us an iTunes review if you have a spare 5 minutes. And for each minute you have spare, please give us a star. A 5-star rating will help give the show a little bit of exposure and help boost it in the algorithms and stats on iTunes. Not quite sure how those work, but hey. Of course, you will have heard our Glastonbury 2004 episode by now with Matt Phillips, the wonderful Matt who came on recently. And he, of course, was the first patron on the Patreon who didn't know me personally and wasn't related to me. And of course, like any mafia don, I always look after my friends. I'm always thankful to have you listeners and any patrons on the show. And even if just a small percentage of you out there join the Patreon, it would definitely sharpen up this show and allow me to take more time off work and make more episodes. Oh yeah, and on that note, I am no longer unemployed, thank fuck. And last but not least, check out the blog. You must know about the blog by now. We post content regularly on there. And you can check out some of the latest articles that are up right now. We've had the top 12 Paul McCartney breakup songs, a review of all of Paul McCartney's album covers from best to worst, and most recently, in a prelude to our Tug of War and Pipes of Peace episodes, I've been doing War and Peace, turning both Pipes of Peace and Tug of War into a single release, which was very fun and very difficult to write, actually. And there we are, people. Right, on with our songs that have slipped through the net. Now, to be honest, folks, I really wasn't looking forward to stepping backwards, as some of these early Macca recordings can just be a bore to sit through, and they just sound terrible. AKA, they were demos that never made it to the album for a reason. But hey, seeing as how we are moving on to Macca in the 80s now, it's another chance for us to step back and hear the younger voice of Paul, a more tenacious Paul, and a less refined one, shall we say. Most specifically, the majority of the songs that we are discussing on our list today are very unique indeed, as they all break the format of the show. As you know, on the show, we try to concern ourselves exclusively with the post-Beatles life of Paul McCartney, and unfortunately, most of these songs all come from home recordings around 1968 and 1970. Obviously, I seem to be spending a bit more time on this show trying to get around the fact that we don't talk about the Beatles here, but that's the way it goes. So these songs are earlier than our official starting point on the show, but this isn't exactly like straight up Beatles material either. And I thought it would be interesting to witness some of that transitionary period between McCartney writing songs for a group and writing songs exclusively for himself. And the year we start, 1968, is absolutely perfect for that. For, as we know, the Beatles as a recording unit were more or less non-functioning and buried by this point. In the sessions that I went through, which was only really made up of two separate, previously unaware collections of bootlegs from that time that I did not know about, and what I did find very interesting, though, was the prevalence of Paul and Paul McCartney compositions in this period in general, as on top of all the songs that he did make that made it into Let It Be and the Get Back concept album, most of the songs, you have to add up all the songs that we have on today's episode, and then we have all the songs that actually made it onto McCartney 1 as well, that I'm sure he would have been shopping around in the group at the time. Now, whilst I, as a man, sat in his bedroom in 2018, I am eternally grateful that I can hear early versions of Teddy Boy, Another Day, The Backseat of My Car, Every Night, and Suicide right here. But I cannot help but feel that neither John nor George were messing around, shopping, experimenting, and demonstrating nearly as many songs. You just don't see it. Or at least not in the blistering manner in which Paul was writing. And I think it just goes to reinforce Paul's strain and struggle to keep the band busy, keep them focused, and keep them moving, playing music in this latter period, especially if they were to be on camera for the Let It Be documentary. But as we will soon see, it may not have been the best approach to the proceedings. As we move through the songs, I will let you know the best of my ability when we jump through the timeline, but we really shouldn't be ending up in 1997 or anything. The first of our songs today is an awfully giggly affair, and I found it tricky not to smirk myself the first few times I heard it, as it really is a rather little charming affair. It's called How Do You Do? Sitting on a woody deck and dancing in the double decker shoe. I don't know. So how do you do? When you first hear Linda smile and titter as Paul starts doing his silly little voices, you instantly feel some of that wonderfully intimate charm present in recordings like Hey Diddle and the home recordings of Dear Friend, for example. And like those recordings, you really do feel like you could almost be there with them as they're goofing around in their day-to-day lives. The song itself is one of Paul's proto-campfire nursery rhymes slash children's songs. This, of course, would be a theme that would go on throughout the rest of his career. But if anything, it's interesting to see him leaning that way so early on in his relationship with Linda. I mean, she obviously has a child at this point, but it's cool to see him throwing himself into that kind of paternal mode so quickly, maybe unknowingly even, but you can still see the progression. The lyrics themselves are delightfully silly, and it all feels like one big tongue twister to try and get the others to sing along for his own amusement, a bit like the breakdown in Cab Calloway's Minnie the Moocher. The song itself is undoubtedly charming to a fault, but it's unfinished through and through, and is essentially made up of only one or two verses that I can barely make out. Yeah, you know, I bet this is a great song if I could hear it, you know? And as I'm sure you heard, even despite the terrible recording equipment, clearly, the crackling and the laughing, Paul still hardly makes the effort to enunciate for this one, and to this day, I still don't know what the lyrics are. But that aside, I know I won't come down too harshly on this song at all, because I like the vibe, and I know I would have loved it if it was finished. Okay, that's good. We're off to a good start, I think. This isn't too bad at all, really. The next song on our list comes from the same recording as the last, the same day, in fact. And whilst it still has the same handmade charm that the other has, the tone of this song is a little more serious this time around. The song is called, and don't jump to any conclusions, but the song is called Heather. Will it take a feather in any kind of weather? You put it together, and what have you got heather, heather, heather. You take a cat, maybe that, you put it on the mat, and what have you got heather, heather, heather. Goes like this. To me, I immediately thought of bebop, you know, with that kind of mystical yet swampy kind of a rhythm that still has a real flair to it. And then the second thing I inevitably thought of was, oh, this is another one of those songs where Paul has gotten hooked on some girl's name and simply wants to force a song out of it. I mean, he couldn't have picked a more retrospectively inappropriately titled song if he tried, but fortunately for Paul, he's always got the excuse of saying that no song about Heather Mills would ever actually be as fun and bouncy and enjoyable as this Heather. You know, if it was ever pressed into an awkward corner about it. It's a very simple composition, and yet, because of Macca's performance, there is a certain charm that is ever-present. What this song does is have a wonderfully hypnotic, hand-clapping percussion section and insight into that blossoming, bucolic Macca aesthetic that is developing as well. We're moving on our way towards Ram, as well as that innate McCartney ability to take any phrase, any terminology or name, and put it to a catchy melody, whether it works or not. And you can listen to this song and think, wow, like, and you'll think, I know this isn't even that good for Paul, but this crappy little demo is still better than 98% of other songwriters and what they will write for the rest of their lives. Like, if my dud tracks, my cold cuts, sounded something like this, I would be more than happy. Moving on, and we have yet another little odd demo recording that immediately reminded me of another song in McCartney's Beatles oeuvre. The song I thought of was Her Majesty, but the song we're listening to now is called Goodbye.
Please don't wake me up too late. Tomorrow comes and I will not be late. Late today when it becomes tomorrow, I will leave and go away. Goodbye, 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 my love, goodbye.
Another sprightly acoustic affair here, and McCartney's clearly having a blast with his post-White Album mastery of the acoustic guitar. This song sounds like it has been the most pre-purposed, specifically designed to be involved in a similar Beatles-esque project. Not that that's a bad thing, this isn't a bad song on its own, but in a wider context, it really doesn't feel like it sounds like anything new at all. It's got a very been there, done that feel. It does feel very much like a serenaders type song for Paul, and you can tell that he's still coming hot off the tail of tracks like Blackbird and Mother Nature's Son, and that his acoustic efforts, which are largely absent from the Let It Be album, were not absent from the sessions, and has basically never stopped from there. This whole side series is going to be packed with failed acoustic ditties, and this one isn't exactly one of the better ones. The chorus is quite instantly easy and catchy to remember in that innocently classic McCartney way, and in all honesty, if you were to take it away and maybe give it to Paul a few years later, he could have used it as some sort of Wings B-side, maybe retool it a little, and I think you'd be good to go. And as we've seen time and time again on this show, it's the most average Paul McCartney songs that seem to be the most annoying. And I think it's the chorus that is by far the weakest element of this song. And it feels like somewhat of the letdown of the chorus in I'm Carrying You. I'm carrying something. We have goodbye, 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 my love. Oh, Christ, Paul. All that build-up and all he was doing was saying goodbye to his love. More effort next time, Paul. Following on, we have a mixture of the Magical Mystery Tour ethereal aesthetics and the rough and ready quality of Let It Be. The next song on our list is the first instrumental to slip past me, but don't worry, I've found it to give it a good going over. Now, despite my trepidations of early McCartney instrumentals, this track still admittedly does have a rather fantastic name. It's called Thank you. the King of the Birds. When this song started, I must admit I got rather excited, as it was a rather unique soundscape for the group. And I must correct myself, this isn't a strict Paul McCartney instrumental, this is actually an instrumental performed with the rest of the Beatles. I'm not sure which ones are performing and what instruments they're on, but they're there. But unfortunately, the song, despite having quite a very enrapturing and enthralling opening couple of movements, it really just fails to go anywhere from then on. And it ends up like a rather turgid child of Old Brown Shoe, Flying and Blue Jay Way, which sounds great on paper, but trust me, it ain't. Despite being a massive letdown, this early jam track is a fantastic window into some of the other sounds Paul slash the Beatles were experimenting with at this time. And I will say, despite, you know, this clearly being a jam, I still get a feeling that it's somewhat being led by Macca. You can see quite a lot of McCartney 1 type elements in the bones of this track. You know, in the sense that you can feel the impending doom of further meandering instrumentals that fail to excite. You know, tracks that make Hot as Sun slash Glasses look like mumbo by comparison. This song would apparently try to pop up much later again in the McCartney story, whereby Paul would try and revive this track in an as-of-yet unreleased demo intended for the unrealised, albeit originally much larger, Rupert the Bear project. Following on, we move on to a song that is either one of the most chuckle-inducing little McCartney ditties, or is one of the most ironically demented soundtracks to a potential horror movie franchise ever made. Get ready regardless, because this is Song of Love.
It's just for you. When I sing a song of love, that's how they, you know, starts off like the idea. It's just for you that I sing this song each morning. It's just for you that I sing this song each night. And as the sun sets,
Song of Love is another one of those cold cuts whereby it can barely even be counted as a single piece, as McCartney stops to giggle almost as often as he actually plays the bugger. This is standard for the very expressive McCartney, and this recording essentially encompasses nothing more than a few ideas that Paul had lying around in the garage that he wanted to try out. Ideas like a hauntingly chilly Tiny Tim-esque falsetto vocal performance that, on one hand, adds to the kind of music hall, dance hall theme that he's clearly intending to go for and is enamoured with, but I also can't help but find it extremely unsettling at the same time. Mac is clearly having a lot of fun with this one, and the amounts of that silly shrieking and hollering set to this old-time, old ragtime ditty rhythm almost makes me wonder whether this is Paul poking fun at himself in a little way, rather similarly to a song like Silly Love Songs, for example, by just seeing how far he can take this insanity. And I'm glad someone's having fun with this song, because outside of the charm and novelty of Paul doing a silly voice, it's very basic, very broad, and unless there's some artistic statement that I'm missing, overall dull to sit through. Which is a cruel thing to say for a song that never got released and was never finished, but it's really annoying. And in a slightly darker twist, it could also be Paul intentionally trying to create the most extremely weaponized version of his granny music in an attempt to drive John Lennon completely insane during these sessions.
Oh, you don't like granny music, do you? Well, we'll make the most granny music that ever grannied a gran.
I mean, I can turn off the YouTube clip if I want to, but poor John had to sit through that every day off his face on heroin. Not a fun time. The one bit I do like, though, that you hear in your right ear at the end of this demo is that you hear Paul directly referencing the director of the Let It Be film, Michael Lindsay-Hogg, who presumably was filming there as well. God, could you imagine how much lost footage is from those original Let It Be sessions? My God. Anyway, here's that snippet. Up next, we have quite possibly the shortest, least complicated, most pointless, most irrelevant, insubstantial and inconsequential hot hit or cold cut that we've ever had before here on this show. But hey, it pads out a minute of content. This is As Clear As A Bell.
Clear as a bell, says La Scala Milan. As clear as a bell, says La Scala Milan.
Now, normally on this show, as to not upset copyright laws or anything like that, I usually only play just under 30 seconds of a song before speaking over it at some point. But I couldn't do that with Clear as a Bell because that was your fucking lot, mate. That was it. Despite being listed as a proper song and panicking me further that I'd missed yet another critical hot hit slash cold cut, it then turned out that this childish little flourish was just seems to be a riff idea that came to McCartney when he was live on the piano, or maybe he just thought of it whilst he was in the toilet having a piss. In fact, the song was so short, I actually confused it for the ending of Song of Love several times during the research for this episode. So that says it all in terms of ideas, scope and likability, in that this song has none of those three things. Up next, we have a song that Miley Cyrus sings whenever she meets her godmother. This is Hello, Dolly. By now that during the Get Back and Let It Be sessions, McCartney was still, despite, you know, trying to get the band to go back to basics, was still fixated on writing these horrendously silly throwback tunes that by this point never made John happy and that John never wanted to be involved in any level. I mean, Paul must know what the rest of the band are into, what kind of music they like, and what kind of music they want to write, and he must know that they are showing so little interest in this sort of music. And Paul wants the band to stay together, right? So why is he pursuing this suicidal line of songwriting? He doesn't have to pander to Lennon or George or Ringo at all, but for Christ's sakes, he must know he can't have it both ways. If you need to get these granny tunes out of your system, then do it in the privacy of your own home. The saddest possible reason for Paul churning out such crappy subpar numbers like this is simply because he can. And I don't mean that in an arrogant or flippant way, but in a desperate way. Like I said earlier, Paul is dying for the Beatles as a unit to keep playing, to keep making music, to keep recording albums, and especially since the cameras are on them during this special period. So I hypothesise for you now that Paul had the right intentions, but he was moving in the wrong direction, like a Catherine wheel that had come off a nail. In trying to keep the rest of the ever-disintegrating band interested and busy with songs, he started writing crapper and crapper stuff off the top of his head, on top of the better stuff, you know, Get Back, Let It Be, the Long and Winding Road and stuff. And it just feels like he's trying to plug in the gaps of songs that the others would naturally fill, because the others would be interested and they'd bring a bunch of songs that they'd experiment with in the studio. But since Paul keeps plugging the gaps with types of songs that he can just write off the top of his head, because that's the type of music that he likes, this leads to worse and worse songs that actually put the group off writing music even more and annoys them even more, and only goes to reinforce this negative tyrant McCartney image of the Let It Be days. Tough break, Paul. Oh yeah, the song. Admittedly, out of the three granny tunes that we've heard so far, this is by far the strongest because it isn't completely annoying or stupid from start to finish. It is the one that has the strongest semblance of a completed melody with a fun, complimentary vocal melody as well. And rather than going on full ballroom, it has a bit more of a dirty pub sing-along vibe, which gives it a bit more of a rustic appeal. And once again, you can't ever take this away from Paul. He always succeeds in this. He does evoke that period that he is trying to capture perfectly. Yet, despite this, it's clearly not Beatles material. It's trite, sentimental, and all of those other lame, soppy, throwback McCartney descriptive words that we always use to describe this type of song. Up next, we have yet another McCartney song where he's trying to help exhaust the number of songs where the title and the chorus is someone's name, though this time McCartney swapped things up in a bid to be a little bit more progressive. This song is instead about a fella, and the song is called There You Are, Eddie, or just Eddie in some circles. There you go,
maybe they're supposed to be big. I think it's a little tiny. Oh, I thought it was glass mouth getting set about. This can't be it. Eddie, you are.
But you know that you've been walking too long.
really tell with this recording is that, at least by this point, no one is stopping to listen to each other play and experiment with their songs in the studio, with lots of overplaying, tuning of instruments going on in the background, as well as a whole heap of conversation and footsteps going on. Now, I know the studios are big and they may even be tens of feet apart, but it does feel so alien to hear such a discordant and unharmonious Beatle product. Compositionally, it's another one of those annoyingly unfinished Paul McCartney songs that only goes to reinforce the sheer prolific nature of the songwriting in these sessions, but it just seemed to be like firing shit at a wall and seeing what would stick. To me, this song is a crossbreed of Venus and Mars, the first part, and Mama's Little Girl, only it's really unfocused and it could benefit from a more controlled studio environment. Though there is some very adorable live editing and interplay with Lennon, who does actually seem to take a slight cursory interest in this song after several minutes of McCartney actually playing it. But then Lennon suggests that Paul changes the name from Eddie to Nigel, and in doing so they both giggle endlessly, singing "There You Are, Nigel" instead.
There you go, Nigel, Nigel, Nigel. There you go, Nigel, Nigel, you don't. There you go, baby.
Which makes the kind of pointless recording all the worthwhile, because it does show, if nothing else, that Lennon and McCartney were not 100% completely cunty to each other throughout the entirety of the Let It Be sessions, which is always nice to know. Moving on from failed acoustic demos, the endless list of failed acoustic demos, we have a rather enjoyable a little acoustic number here instead. It has an abundance of Macca home recording charm and a healthy dose of kooky Linda backing vocals. So what's the problem? Well, first things first, the song is called Indeed I Do, and it goes like this.
Every way I turn, every day I learn, yes I do, yes indeed I do. Every day, every night I do, everywhere.
So with this song, the big issue that immediately leapt out to me was that I really didn't feel like I was hearing this song for the very first time. I feel like I'd heard this before. It was a very deja vu moment, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Then, going through the songs of that period, I saw the evolutionary tree starting to take shape, and I saw which songs evolved from others and where the tree and the branches were expanding. And then I came across the Ram cold cut, A Love For You. I ran them against each other, and I noticed the similar thread. So yeah, it's a case that this song simply got the axe because it was just too damn similar to A Love For You, which ironically wasn't released either until the Ram Remastered Edition. Or maybe it was the case that this song was scuppered and gutted for spare parts to make A Love For You, and maybe this song was simply just the first attempt, rather like how we had Ram on Ram, and that moved into Big Barn Bed. Either way, you can see this as an early Man equivalent of a Paul McCartney song here in the wild. It's got that same rumpy pump beat and tempo, the vocal melody is strikingly parallel, and there is an awfully similar backing part vocal also. I mean, A Love For You consistently does everything that this song does, but way better, and quote-unquote, takes it to the next level. So it's no surprise that a song like this just got left in the dust of history. Again, not a poor effort or anything, but it's yet another cold cut that is far more interesting as a trivia fact than it is an actual song. Finally, we have a track that I actually feel like was a cunt hair away from being an actual track included on an actual Paul McCartney release. But we wouldn't be here today, if it was. The song is called Blackpool. The song itself is a very lively affair. It's full of bounce and life, and you can tell that McCartney is having a blast doing a bit of a clippity-cloppity, riding into town, cod cowboy ballad. There's this tangibly swampy, almost bluesy atmosphere to the whole thing, which goes very well with Paul's slurred drawl. And even though the recording is so primitive, it feels like it's 99% towards being completed. It's a very fun juxtaposition of US and UK culture that makes me think of songs like The Backseat of My Car and Helen's Wheels, more than, say, Rocky Raccoon, for example, which does literally sound more similar to these tracks than those two. Again, like Heather, I did have fun with this one. The charms are there, they are quite obvious. But the reason it made it onto this list and not onto an album, it might just be a little bit too Paul, if you know what I mean. Now, for our friends out there who are listening to us from overseas, Blackpool is a seaside resort in the UK, just north of Liverpool, and was once the jewel of the working-class British holidaymaker, but now with the cheap price of commercial airlines, it's more or less become a running joke as to how shit it is. But it's a very 60s place by nature, as it was its peak era, so it makes sense that McCartney, having lived so close to the town, would have a soft spot for it, and would want to put it into song form. However, as you saw with Heather and other countless cold cuts, this could very well be another one of those songs that Paul simply just liked the word, and he will, come hell or high water, get it into a melody. Regardless of his motivations, McCartney would actually go on to try and revive this obscure number from his songbook during the recording sessions in 1971 for Ram, and the acoustic nature, the solid drumming, and the barking dog in the background confirms that it was tested out for Ram. It's a shame, really, as it really would have been a fantastic B-side to a single that was released from Ram, maybe. Or maybe just some generic album filler. But perhaps its overly simplistic nature and its requirement to know the geography of Northern England meant it lacked the marquee value to make the grade. Now, there is a little subsection of our tiny-ass little community that have actually heard this song, and then they've actually seen the song to have a connection with the Paul is Dead conspiracy, which is an episode that we'll be getting to very soon. I actually can't wait to talk about Paul is Dead. And the idea would be that Blackpool, again, which is close to Liverpool, and they, whoever they are, you know, the Cabal, the Illuminati, once Paul had died, or once they had Paul killed, they supposedly buried his body in Blackpool. And obviously, the best thing you can do to make sure that the man you have killed and replaced with a lookalike of Paul McCartney writes a song called Blackpool to draw attention to it. Or maybe this was an example of Billy Shears, the supposed doppelganger, or the other three Beatles, trying to sneak a message out for us to hear. But clearly he tried to bring up this song at least twice and the studio silenced him. For nefarious reasons. But yeah, Blackpool, the song's pretty good actually. And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen, and into sex. We are finally back on track, back on schedule, as we have, for now at least, caught up with all the songs that I'm aware of that I missed. Now, like I said earlier, it is almost a certainty that we'll be doing another one of these 0.5 episodes in the future, as I have no doubt that the rabbit hole of Paul's unreleased tracks only goes deeper and deeper and deeper. The thing is, I know that, well, actually, no, fuck that. I hope there are people out there like you, yes, you, the person listening right now, who knows about a song that I've missed on a cold cut episode, maybe from around this period, maybe from a previous episode, or maybe there's one that you know that I'll miss just because it's so obscure in the future, then please let me know as soon as possible. Get in contact, drop me a line on Twitter, which is @McCartneyPod, or simply email in the show at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. And with your help, the next 0.5 episode may be out sooner than planned. Also, if you have a spare few minutes, you can find our blog on paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. You can find all of our latest articles that I couldn't quite fit into an episode. Check out the Patreon page, which is patreon.com/McCartneyPod. Give it a gander if you want to help support the show. Show your thanks, assist our growth, help me keep the lights running of the show, keep the show free, the whole nine yards, yada, yada, yada. Then that's the place for you. And hey, if you are super duper nice, could you please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, as it helps with our exposure and recommendations online. Thank you very much for listening, folks. This is quite a short one. I'll try and get it out today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and please stick around for next week as we will be distracting ourselves even further with another digressional adventure into the world of Paul McCartney. And it's going to be a fuck ton of fun. I'm so looking forward to it. I'm sure Denny Lane is already playing us out in that oh-so-beautiful way that he plays on No Words. I'll see you all next time. Can't wait. Peace and love. Take care, folks.